above, building the etheric soul body. And when we talk about building the etheric soul body, we mean building more of the two higher ethers, the soul ethers, the light ether and the reflecting ether, into the vital body. Now, in an earlier talk, we mentioned briefly that the biological ethers are limited in their growth capacity. It's like Christ Jesus says in the Bible, which of you by taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? What he's referring to is the size of the dense physical body. And even its counterpart, its matrix in the chemical ether. We can add muscle, we can certainly add fat, but even in that, there are limits. We can't allow the body to get bigger and bigger the way the trees get bigger and bigger. Similarly, in the life ether, we can drink all of the fresh pressed vegetable juice that we want to drink, or milk within 10 minutes out of the cow. And through etheric digestion, we can attract the life ether into our vital body, but there are limits. We can't have a reservoir of life ether so that we would never tire out. And you can drink juice 10 times a day, but there's going to be a limit as to how much you can actually hold in the matrix of your vital body. So, in the biological ethers and in the dense physical body, the value of them is limitation. But when we come to the soul ethers, which relate more to the higher spiritual vehicles, there is no limit. There's no limit to how much of the soul ethers that we can attract and maintain in our soul bodies. The only limit is our willingness to do the work that builds them, that attracts them and builds them into our being. So, the more we attract of the higher ethers into our soul bodies, the better our experience of each and every world in which we function. With a greater soul body, we can see the outer world more clearly, and a stronger soul body, we can relate to the spirit itself through intuition, because the intuition has more to play on. So the richer our etheric soul bodies, the more clear our consciousness is, the more intuitive we are. So we're talking about bodybuilding. And in some respects, bodybuilding of all types is similar. For example, if we think of physical bodybuilding, we think of certain kinds of exercises and certain kinds of eating of foods. This is something that I learned from Eddie, that through exercise, you can take off excess fat, but you can only take it off when the vital body decides that it's going to be taken off. You can't take it off and say, I want it to come off here, except if the controlling factors of the vital body say that's best for the body for it to be taken off. We can build each muscle, each and every muscle. A pianist can tell you that if you need to build a muscle in your pinky, there's an exercise that you can build exactly which muscle that you want to build. You can't take off the fat that way. To some extent, our daily activities build and maintain muscle, especially if we do vigorous work. Now, in an analogous way, higher bodies are like this too. All of the higher bodies rule and are maintained by use. They don't grow in size, but they grow in concentration, or in density, or in quality. But they grow by use. Now, this growth of any of the higher bodies, not just the etheric soul body that we're talking about, grow and are improved and augmented in that work by exercise. For the next, this one and the next two talks, we're going to be talking a lot about spiritual exercises. The Rosicrucian Fellowship, like all other spiritual schools, has spiritual exercises. As has come out in the discussions that we've been having all week, that spiritual exercises are an important, and in some cases a large part, of our lives. The Rosicrucian spiritual exercises are based on the principles that are in the cosmos. And the principles of each of our vehicles. In this regard, they're very much like physical exercises. If you want to develop a certain way, like if you're going mountain climbing or if you're going deep sea diving, there are appropriate exercises. And they're based upon physiological need. If you're going to be doing high altitude work, there are certain physiological things that you have to do. Just like Olympics, when the Olympics were in Mexico City, the people trained at high altitude to be able to perform there. Moreover, the exercises of the Rosicrucian Fellowship are not only based on the principles of the different worlds, but they're based on the evolutionary cosmic process. That is, all of the Rosicrucian exercises are based on cosmological functions or cosmological means of attaining things. And there's a reason for this. We are a product of the universe. And we are the universe. We as human beings are complete wholes. And we are microcosms of the greater universe. And in our microcosmic nature, we are a small-scale replica of the universe. Therefore, if we want to develop correctly, we have to develop in such a way that we develop exactly as the cosmos develops. We can't separate ourselves from the universe. And any time that we try to separate ourselves from it, as we're now trying to separate ourselves from nature, is any type of separation is going to have disastrous consequences. Now, in exercises, even if they're based on cosmic principles, and even if they're based on cosmological principles, exercises can be abused. At one time, just for the experience of it, when I was living in Southern California, I went to Santa Monica Beach. Do any of you know what Santa Monica Beach is? The nickname for it is Muscle Beach. This is where all bodybuilders go. When I went there, I had some of the most creepy feelings I've ever had in my life. Some of the people develop their muscles, specific muscles, to extremes and in abnormal ways. They develop their muscles for look. not to work, not to function better, but to develop the muscles for looks. They have some kind of ideal. I think it's a perverted ideal. Now, some of these people become partially muscle bound, which means that they have built some muscles in such an exaggerated way that they're big and that they inhibit the use of other muscles. That there are some things you can't, as strong as you are, there are some things that you can't do because the muscles you want to use to do them are inhibited because of other muscles being bulgingly large. And it's really quite something to see something like that. You've got these people that are into physique. Now, even with spiritual exercises, it is possible to do things similar to what the people do who are at Muscle Beach. You can develop some activities of your consciousness with great specialization. With specialization that is so great that it destroys the end of spiritual exercises. I don't want to make a universal law of it, but in general, spiritual exercises should be develop general faculties and not specific faculties. There are exercises that you can use to see only your own past lives, but they limit you from being able to see the past lives of others. There are people who in their specializations develop remarkable abilities in the inner bodies. For example, there have been idiot savants that can barely function in the world at all. But if you say something like May 12th, 1840, by the time the 1840 is out of your mouth, they can tell you what day of the week it is. Instantaneously, they have developed a capacity in their mind and can reflect that capacity back into the reflecting ether. And you get to name them any day, and they can tell you what day of the week it is. Obviously, this is probably somebody that either was very strict practicing Jew, where the keeping of the Sabbath, which is the same formula works for all, but that, you know, is a sacred thing. It's one of the most constant things in all of history. Either that, it was an astrologer or something like that, that specialized in this one quality, but made themselves incapable of doing a lot of other things. Now these, of course, are very extreme cases. One of the beauties of the exercises of the Rosicrucian Fellowship is that these exercises, many of them can be performed in everyday life. And all of them improve our functioning in our day-to-day working. So that whatever we have to do in life, we can do it better because of the exercises. The reality of life is the moderating factor in the Rosicrucian spiritual life. That we have to function in the world. This is where our evolution is taking place. And we've been saying all along that the chief purpose that the Rosicrucian Fellowship exists is to help people to take the next evolutionary step. And if we withdraw ourselves from life and we don't interact with people, and if we aren't living examples of how these exercises can help the people to take the next step by living better lives, we're not going to be very successful as an organization. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, our lives are all we really have. Our lives are all that we really have. And it is the quality of our lives and what we do with our lives and what we do in our lives that counts. Nothing else, you know, we can be rich or poor, we can be strong or weak, but it is the character and quality with which we live our lives that counts. Pianists have exercises too. And they are exercises that are designed to enhance performance. They're not activities in their own right. Because some people, and some kinds of exercises, you can get in and the exercises become their own end. The pianist does an exercise, so when it comes time to perform and to be able to play a certain passage of music, the exercises have developed the neuromuscular things in the fingers, and one's capable of doing them better. And the exercises are necessary. There's no shortcut. One of the greatest composers in the last several hundred years was a composer because he tried to take a shortcut. Robert Schumann. There's a difficulty, I believe it's this finger, that's the hard one to develop, isn't it? And he basically put a splint on his finger that stretched it. And he left the splint on for several months. And he said he was not going to have to go through all of those years of developing that finger in order to get the stretch that you needed. When he took the device off of his finger was in the middle. And he tried to take a shortcut, and he ended up at a dead end. But he couldn't quit music, because music was his whole life, and so he became a composer. It's because he tried to take a shortcut that we ended up with a very great composer. So the exercises for a pianist are based right on the nerves and muscles in our hands. And it's in the same way that the exercises of the Rosicrucian Fellowship are designed. They're designed right on the basis, on the principles, and on the use of the vehicles, the higher vehicles, and they're not just exercises for exercise sake. Now, there are other similarities. When we do bodybuilding in the physical body, we take in certain kinds of food. And certain kinds of food help us build in certain ways. Like the protein cocktails of bodybuilders are legendary things. So what we're going to talk about when we're talking about building the soul body, we're going to be talking about soul food. Only soul food, as we use the term, is very different than it is in the slang, that is the street language. From this all, we can see that some of the exercises are performed at times that allow peak performance of exercises. Some of the exercises are done at special times and at special places because they have to fit into our lives. Other exercises are done exactly as we live our lives. And they have to fit into our lives, and we have to make our lives better. Because this is it. Because if you start getting into exercises and you start living them for their own sake, you begin to think of life as a dress rehearsal. And there is no dress rehearsal for life. This is it. You're living it every day. You can't jump out and say, no, I don't want to live it anymore, or no, I'm not living it anymore. You can't say that. You can't jump off the merry-go-round. Yes, these exercises relate to other realms. But even these other realms are part of that same unity of life. It's the same reality, and we won't be able to get to those other realms of life unless we can live our lives to peak capacity right where we are. So what we're going to do right now, we're not going to get very far tonight, because I've got all kinds of side trips that are interesting but also important, because they tell us why we're doing the exercises that we do. But tonight, and for part of tomorrow night, we're going to study the soul ethers, the light and the reflecting ethers, and we're going to study them with regard to spiritual exercises. We're going to try to see them in the effects of our lives and how we can literally build them right into our etheric bodies. As we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about etheric vision or things like that, because that's silly. Because if you've got the stuff and if you've done the exercises, nobody needs to tell you what clairvoyance is all about. Books showing you pictures of the aura are a waste. You know, there are whole books that are dedicated to showing this color is this and this color is that. If you've got the stuff, you can see it for yourself, and that kind of thing is a waste of time to do. Now, much of what we're going to say is extremely simple. There's nothing wrong with repeating simple things that are of great importance. Self-importance is one of the greatest impediments to spiritual development. And we're in trouble when we don't want to do the little things of life because our life is too important to waste time on this or that. And some of those little things are very, very important things. When we have self-importance in such a way that we don't want to repeat things or we don't want to look at the simple things in the spiritual life, our life is not worth very much. If the story is true, many of the big things in life have come from simple little experiences. According to the story, an apple fell and bopped Isaac Newton on the head, and he didn't just get angry about it. He had liberal rising, and that indicates the proximity to apple trees, I guess. But he didn't get angry. He asked, why do apples fall? You know, that's something we see happen all the time. We've seen it happen from childhood on, and because we recognize it, we take it for granted. When the reality is that most of the great discoveries that have been made are people asking questions about simple things every day. And we have the whole theory of universal gravitation just because Isaac Newton asked what happened. Why did that apple fall to hit me on the head? Obviously, in those days, it had to have happened that way, because in those days, all the apples were organic, and organic apples are more likely to lead to a better discovery than otherwise. Of course, I'm trying to laugh at some of my own follies and foibles. What we're going to talk about tonight and tomorrow night is of maximum evolutionary importance. Please forgive me if it's too simple, but it's something that's very simple that is of maximum importance. All right, let's just begin by looking at the negative pole of the light ether. In the earlier talk yesterday that I watched very badly, we said that the negative pole of the light ether is responsible for coloration and pigmentation in response to sunlight.
Excuse me, is that light or light ether?
Light. Light. We're dealing with light and reflecting ethers only because those are the soul ethers. Now, we've been saying all along that it is that through use and exercises that our bodies grow, especially the higher bodies. Now, if we vector those last two statements together, these last two facts, we could say that by going to the beach and getting a suntan, we are building the light ether component of our vital bodies, and that this is not what we mean by a spiritual exercise, using the light ether of our vital bodies to get a suntan. In a small way, that's perfectly true. It does have that effect. Everything we do, whether we're conscious of it or not, contributes to our evolution. And we do, in fact, develop the light ether. It's going to be more important as the atmosphere of the Earth changes. Our relation to this light of the sun that's coming in, especially the greater amount of ultraviolet light. If you look at a definition in physics of ultraviolet light, and you look at Max Heindel's definition of etheric vision, and or Rudolf Steiner's for that example, for that matter, the ultraviolet light is very much like what light ether is spoken of in mysticism. I don't want to go into that because that's not our purpose tonight. But everything we do, even getting a suntan consciously or unconsciously, is contributing to our spiritual growth. But we're taught the things that we do most self-consciously are the ones that are done in accordance with the laws of nature, and the cosmological principles are the ones that we're going to grow the most through. This is what it means to be a self-conscious servant. We're self-conscious of everything that's happening in our life, and we deliberately and voluntarily work with the laws of nature to fulfill the purposes of evolution. Service is not limited to preconceived categories or activities, that these are service and nothing else is service. Almost anything we can do, or everything that we do and can do, can be a service. It's the attitude and the purpose and how we self-consciously use things where the service comes in. It is in a much more soulful activity of the negative pole of the light ether that we make significant progress in developing the soul body. That activity is perception. The more we self-consciously perceive things, the more our soul body will grow. The more and the better we perceive things, the more our soul body will grow. Yes, we use our senses every day. And yes, we do grow as a consequence of using our senses. What is being suggested by the Rosicrucian philosophy is very clear. It is self-conscious use of our senses to maximum capacity. Now, some spiritual philosophies teach students to eschew the senses because living in them is succumbing to evolution, succumbing to illusion. Sorry. With the Rosicrucian philosophy, it's just the opposite. It teaches us that the more and the better we use our senses, and the more we are in harmony with what's going on around us, the more we are participating in evolution. It's almost blasphemous to not look at and appreciate the world around us, which is a very wondrous and beautiful divine creation, and to say that the senses that we have taken millions and billions of years to evolve should be assured that amounts to just about being blasphemy. When we work with our senses, the limitations of each of the senses, the limitations of this world, working with those limits actually brings us an objectivity, a very good objectivity. Yes, it's not like a theory of vision. We can only look at that chair in front of us from one point of view at a time. Whereas from the higher worlds, we can look at it from many perspectives or all at the same time. But when we look at it, we've got to remember, we're like little kids in terms of evolution. We're only just beginning. And the more that we can develop a keen objectivity, there are people in the world that they can look at that chair and they can make their hands the distance of the width of the top of the chair and they can be within microns. You can give them almost any object like that and they have that kind of a perception that they can say it's this wide and they're always dead on. That is an objectivity. See, what happens is, not only do spiritual exercises unfold higher capacities, when we work with the objectivity of perception, when we come to the higher faculties, we will be able to transplant and grow that same kind of objectivity into the higher faculties. And we won't be at a loss at all. To some extent, anytime we go into the spiritual worlds, we're at a loss because it's such a remarkable experience, but we won't be as much of a loss in the higher worlds if we have developed the objectivity. That objectivity will be brought with us so that when we become seers, that our seership will be accurate. And we'll be able to use it. Not that it won't be the same way as we use our senses, but we will have that objectivity. So the Rosicrucian philosophy does not agree with the philosophies that teach that it is wrong to use the senses. However, the Rosicrucian teaching does teach us not to become attached to our perceptions and not to indulge ourselves in our perceptions. It's very good to look at something and to appreciate it and to see what it actually is, but to become indulgent and to please ourselves for some kind of personal satisfaction, that is to be eschewed, not using the senses at all. In fact, if we become attached to our senses, we lose the objectivity of our experience because we become subjectively attached, and the value of that sense is only in that it pleases us. Personal identification with things is a very weakening thing. This is one reason why the Rosicrucian exercises in perception and soul building, it is recommended that most of the activity be done on the higher senses, the senses at a distance. That is the sense of sight, which can see things to astronomical distances, and the sense of sound, which is very, very highly accurate and perceives things that are removed. The personal senses, like touch, or taste, or smell, be a little bit more careful with them because they're meant, to some extent, at this point in evolution, they're meant to protect us from being rotten food by being able to smell it first, or, you know, to even have us enjoy the eating of food or something like that. But you can see that it's very easy to become addicted to the pleasures of taste. So you have to be a little more careful with them. Hearing, the sense of sound, is the seers find is that it is the oldest of our senses, and that it's the least likely to illusion. The fact that there are indeed illusions doesn't mean that we should eschew the senses, though. It means that we have to be very careful about how we pursue the senses. Vision is our very broadest sense, and its capacity to pick up multiple details and keep them in perspective is marvelous. When you see all the things that we see and all the details and how everything relates to each other, that's a wonderful thing. And the more we cultivate that, and the more we see the beauty, the more we see the good in the world that is around us. For me, to walk in this garden every day and see the things there, you know, we've been all looking at these brown-eyed Susans. If you look at them and look at them in full light, you not only see that there's color that goes beyond the petals, which is the beginning of the fairy vision, but if you look at the spaces in between them, you see that the greens underneath them are a beautiful, beautiful blue-green. You know, like this is a beautiful world. It's our divine duty to look at the world. If you think about it, how many beings are there that can see and objectify and appreciate the external world? Only humans. Animals have senses in the external world, but they don't have the self-consciousness. And they're guided primarily by instinct, by their group spirits working through them, protecting them. And it isn't a matter of adoring the creation. We as human beings are the only beings in this external three-dimensional world that can see this world and appreciate it. That is a tremendous service to God, to the collective universal spirit, because we're the only ones that are seeing the final product, the end of the line. We're the only ones that have seen the outside. That's big stuff. And so this is an exercise, and it isn't an exercise that tires you out. It's an exercise that performs a very valuable function. And I don't know how you can not practice observation, which is the exercise that we use for looking at the external world, and not become just very soulful in the act of appreciating what's out there. The clarity of improved perception is a joy. The Rosicrucian Fellowship teaches a series of exercises that pertain to the activity of observation. Two of these exercises pertain especially to the light ether component of the soul body. They are called observation and discrimination, and they work together. Students who are practicing observation are encouraged to look at things very clearly as possible, even if that means wearing glasses. There is a tendency among us, because we are children of fire, we are Freemasonic, and in our nature we tend to be proud. And in our pride, we sometimes don't look down on wearing glasses. This is a case where pride is injuring us. If we need to use glasses to see, by all means, use glasses. But see, look at things. Very important. So we're encouraged to look at things in distinct detail and to see every detail as well as to see the whole composition. Now, there are a lot of psychological illusions about seeing. And one of them is because we see things and we recognize, we take for granted that we know them. Taking things for granted is the opposite of the spiritual life. Taking things for granted is putting ourselves to sleep. And in the spiritual life, we become progressively more awake. We want to be clear and alive and awake in our consciousness. We don't want to go to sleep. We don't want to be like the disciples in Gethsemane that went to sleep when they were confronted with something that was of very high spiritual importance and they couldn't keep up with it, so they went to sleep. When I have the opportunity, I try to draw. And I have in my friendship about 4 or 5 people who draw. And they have drawn for years and for most of their life. And some of these people would no sooner think of a day without drawing than a day without eating, because it's part of their life. Each and every one of these friends reports improvement. That is, they say they can see better. They can see more. Part of this improvement is learning how to use your eye and even to focus it better. Part of the improvement is due to self-consciousness, because when you can see and reproduce something, you become more self-conscious of your ability, and then you think you can do more, and you try to do more, and you can do it. It's a very important spiritual fact that the more clearly you see things, the more you see things true to nature, the healthier you are psychologically, and the healthier you are spiritually. Because truth is what it's all about. Truth is one of the big aspects or attributes of the Spirit. Christ says, I am the truth. And so when you're seeing things true, you're accustoming your entire being to be in touch with the truth. A big part of the improvement is a part of the improvement that we're talking about tonight. That the more we use perception, the more we draw into our being the light ether, which gives us the capacity to see. A person who has a lot of light ether in their aura walks in light. And it is a light that through which they can see reality better. It's a very important thing. In a couple of days, we're going to talk about seeing the things in the inner world better because of the density of the light ether in our vital bodies. It's a little hot in here, isn't it? This is actually what builds our soul body. By perceiving, we need the stuff to perceive. You know, the eye evolved because there was light. The ear evolved because there was sound. And the more we listen, the more we see, the more we give ourselves the capacity to live and see. This is what our spiritual life is like. This is what's preparing us for the future. Discrimination, or I should say, this is an exercise that we can practice every day. Even if we're walking to work, we can look at things more clearly. I have images in my consciousness. I can call back images out of the reflecting ethers from the very first day, from the very first days that I was studying the Rosicrucian philosophy. I took it to heart. I haven't always taken it to heart. I can't say that I'm an ardent student every moment. But I can remember I had a hospital bill to pay off right about the time that I had learned about the Rosicrucian philosophy. And I walked a mile and a half to 2 miles to work every day, and I washed milk trucks to pay off my hospital bill. And I walked down the street And I looked at every house and I looked at every tree as clearly as I could. And do you know that to this day, I can sit here, and I can stand here, and I can call up the houses on the street because I took the time to pay attention to it. Discrimination is the exercise that brings the mind into the observation process. The mind helps us to determine the relationships of the components that we're observing. It's not meant to be a purely mental thing. It's not meant to have the mind supplant observation, but it is to get the two to work together. If you draw, you see things, and you have to discriminate. You have to choose which are important. Because you can't go sit down with a pencil. You can't draw everything you see. You can only draw a very small proportion. And you have to choose. This is an art. It's a discriminative art where what represents what you want to say about what you're seeing. It's a discrimination to determine what you draw in and what you don't draw. I'll tell you that how do you solve this problem? How do I give this perspective? Or how do I keep the proportion of the size of this thing relative to this thing at the same time that you're drawing, which is an amazingly peaceful activity, at the same time you're drawing, you're solving problems of dimensionality, of perspective, of proportion, of light and darkness, and they're all problems that you have to discriminate in order to solve. So the discrimination actually improves the observation. Eventually, when you get further on down the line, especially when you start getting into the inner worlds and you're observing the inner worlds, the discrimination is what helps you to understand what it means. It actually even happens if you're drawing something like a cactus or something like that, and you can see that there are certain indentations, you know, in the ribs of a cactus, you can begin to understand why they are, to give much more surface so that they can take in more sunlight without losing the ability to bring water to the surface. I don't know how to say it, but I know how to see it because I've done it. And it's that kind of thing where discrimination works into the whole thing. All right. Now let's turn to looking at, this is going very, very slow, but it's so important, and it's so fundamental, and so basic, and it improves our lives so much that we have to go slow. When we look at acquiring light ether by looking at the positive pole of the light ether, we are brought to one of the most fundamental precepts for all Rosicrucian students. As we saw last evening, when we talked about the light ether, we said that in warm-blooded beings, the light ether heats and drives the blood. Let's try to work that into how it works into our soul nature by examining the second activity, the driving of the blood. Earlier, or in this talk, we mentioned that the ethers serve, or that was in last night's talk, we talked that they serve as a buffering or a transporting middle ground between the outer dense body and the inner higher vehicles. Actually, each of the ethers stands for one of the vehicles that we use, and there are special connections between each of the ethers and each of the bodies. The chemical ether relates to the dense physical body. All of the function of the chemical ether in our vital bodies is used for maintaining and building our dense physical body. It has no other function. The life ether relates to the vital body itself. It is the epitome of the vital body. It is where the vitality is. Without life ether, there can be no vitality. So it's the essence of vitality. Almost all of the function of the life ether is maintaining vital life and cleaning up the physical body so the vital life can be there, but still it's maintaining the life. It's the preserver, it's the protector, it is the healer of the dense physical body and the vital body itself. Let's jump up to the soul ethers. The reflecting ether relates to the mind. In fact, there is a special resonance through the worlds such that the reflecting ether, it resonates directly to the world of thought, the thought stuff in our mind. Without the reflecting ether in the vital body, there can be no thought. The vegetable kingdom has no thought, it has no reflecting ether. All of the intellectual activity in the dense physical body is through the agency of the reflecting ether. Hey, we're going along all right with something here. The light ether relates to the desire body. The desire world and the desire body are the worlds of color. All color in the vital body and in the dense physical body is a result of the light ether, especially the negative pole of the light ether. The chief function of the desire body at this stage of our evolution is motivation to activity. The chief function of its representative in the vital body is the light ether, because it is the light ether that drives the blood and heats the blood and brings the physical body to action. Now this brings us to a special distinction in the soul ethers of the vital body. There are two principal means of bringing the human vital and dense bodies into action. Each of these means involves a specialization and a concentration of the two soul ethers. First of all, there is the nervous fluid, or what is called the nervous fluid. Speaking generally, there appears to be a nervous fluid that traverses along all the nerves. Material science sees it as an electrochemical activity, and they can follow neural impulses as they fluidly go down the nerves, and it has to do, according on the physical basis, it has to do with the electrochemical interactions of sodium and potassium compounds in the neurons and axons and things like that. Actually, with electronic devices, you can actually trace nerve movements or movements along the nerves, and you can even display them visually so that you can see them. This is again due to the breakdown of the ethers into energy that is entropic and which can be measured by our entropic material science. Now, the electrochemical activity actually really occurs in the chemical ether, and it is what brings about the stimulation. It begins with the reflecting ether receiving thoughts from the mind and transmitting those thought impulses along the nerves. So the things that happen neurally are things that happen in the mind, either in the contemplative concrete mind itself or in the reflective mind of the subconscious mind in the ethers that causes automatic responses. But in either case, it's the matter of the reflecting ether working on the nerves that bring things about. The other means of bringing actions about in the dense physical body is in the fluid we know as blood. And there's a special reason why you use the word fluid instead of liquid, because fluid is a more accurate word. The Rosicrucian seers find from clairvoyant investigation that most of the time the blood is fluid, and that fluid contains a gas-like component that is made of the ethers. As blood is exposed and is taken out of the physical etheric body, the ethers evaporate, so to speak, or they become, they're like released gases, and then the blood is seen as a liquid. It's very similar to the way if you continue the process and take the gases out and the liquids, it becomes a crystal. And each one of us, or the blood of each one of us, has a crystalline nature that is unique to ourselves. Of the higher components of the blood, the etheric components of the blood, it is the light ether that is most important, because it is what heats and drives the blood. Now, the Rosicrucian philosophy claims that, in part, circulation is a result of the blood itself, and the heart is driven by the blood, and that the heart is something like an auxiliary pump and a valve system, and that the blood drives the circulation as much as the sinoatrial node, which is neural, which is a pacemaker. We mentioned this last night, that there is circulation in the blood in the fetus before there is a heart. And it is circulation that cannot be attributed to the mother, it cannot be attributed to capillary action, and it cannot be attributed to contraction and expansion of blood vessels. The blood is circulated by the blood. Sounds very strange, but it's a recapitulation of a much earlier time in evolution. Any part of the body, the dense physical body, that is in action has more blood at that area when it is used. In digestion, there's more blood at the stomach. Sexual activity is accompanied by an engorgement of blood. If I try to tune a musical instrument, my ears become bright red because the blood goes to the ears. This is saying that the spirit working through the blood is as important of a factor, and in some cases more important of a factor, as the spirit working through the nerves. An increased concentration of blood is an effect. It's not a cause. The cause is the spirit, and it is the spirit working through the positive pole of the light ether. Now, usually, the blood and the nervous fluid work together harmoniously. However, each functions in a different way. Sometimes they don't work together, but usually, almost all cases. Each of these two ways of effecting action is represented by a different attribute of the spirit. The nervous system has its center in the physical and etheric brain. The nervous system corresponds to the third attribute of our threefold spirit, the thinker, and it functions through nervous impulse. It is highly evolved, and it's very sophisticated, but it is deathlike. And usually, but not always, non-regenerable. The circulatory system has its center in the heart and in the blood itself. It corresponds to the second attribute of the threefold spirit, the life spirit. In the threefold spirit, the life spirit is the preserver, the sustainer, and the sacrificer for life. Everything that is manifest, especially in spiritual life, is manifest through the life spirit. The life spirit is beyond the self, beyond the human spirit that drives the nervous spirit. Therefore, it comes from the realm of selfness. And that selfness is common to all selves, or all threefold spirits, not only humans, but all threefold spirits throughout the entire cosmos. So there's something at least altruistic, but even something that goes beyond normal altruism. This is a very important thing. This means that the life spirit, when it drives the blood to bring us into action, it does so for the sake of the general good and not for self-end. It functions through a flow to accomplish this. This means that actions done from the blood rather than from the nerves are more heart-oriented and less head-oriented. Thus, if we want to build the soul body through the positive pull of the light ether, we have to act more out of the blood and the heart. Basically, what this says is that what we do from the goodness of our hearts, for the sake of the all, for the sake of the good, for the sake of love, and in words that we usually only hear in cursing, for the Christ's sake, are things that build light ether into our vital body. I'd like to give an example of this. Many years ago, when Pluto was sitting on my ascendant, I had to do things that I didn't want to do. And it seemed like, though I don't think it was exactly that way, the more I tried to escape doing them, the more I was coerced into them. And I have Neptune conjoined the ascendant, which means in my outer world, or my interaction with the outer world, I have to deal with sensitivity. And at this time, there was a person in my life that was astoundingly sensitive. So sensitive that they wanted to build a psychic research institute around this one person because she was so phenomenal in the things that she could pick up. We came to be friends, and she learned and understood that she had an involuntary sensitivity, that she wasn't in control of it. And she eventually studied the Rosicrucian philosophy, and no matter how flattering it was to have a psychic institute built around you, she refused to do it. But like a lot of people who are involuntary sensitives, she had psychological problems. She was a pill. She was really hard to deal with. She was insecure. And if you didn't assuage her insecurities, she got angry at you. And she knew really how to get at you. And she was almost a constant presence in my life. But when she couldn't find me, she would go to one of my friends. And this friend, I think, found her as trying as I did. And she came to me one day, and she said, I was with X, and I was making a fuss. And I was persistent, no matter, I wouldn't relent no matter what. And X didn't know what to do and just wanted to get away from me, but he didn't. She said, he did something very generous in continuing to listen to me and work me through this. And she said, do you know what I saw? She said, I saw a little curl of golden light go into his aura, and then it just dissolved. And what she was talking about is what happens when you act from the goodness of your heart. The person who did that, who helped her in this way, may never have known until this moment that this is what happened. But this is literally what happened. That it went into her, into his aura, and maybe it was an infinitesimal amount, but from then on, that person had a little more light. This is a perfect example of building the light ether component of the soul body by doing things from the goodness of your heart. Each time we sacrifice ourselves for the sake of the life spirit, we do that. We cannot build the light ether into our soul body by one sacrificial act. No matter how big that one sacrificial act is, it can't be done that way. It is a slow, careful, tedious, as we live our lives. Even if we're self-conscious and trying to do this self-consciously, it's a very slow, careful process, and we're all doing it. And the more self-conscious we can be about it, and the more we can get other people to act out of the goodness of their heart, the more we're helping them to take the next step in evolution. This is why one of the most fundamental precepts of the Rosicrucian philosophy, we go over it every week in our devotional service, is loving, self-forgetting service to others is the shortest, the safest, and the most joyful road to God. Loving, self-forgetting service is the shortest, the safest, and the most joyful road to God. Loving, self-forgetting service to others is the shortest, safest, and most joyful road to God. All right, all together. Loving, self-forgetting service to others is the shortest, safest, and most joyful road to God. Service, as we said earlier, is not what we preconceive it to be. Anything and everything in our lives can be done. If you look at the life of any saint, the saint who became a saint did so by doing everything as a service. Even the things we have to do every day, our duties, the things we have to do in our job, we can excel beyond what our duties are by voluntarily of our heart giving more. The heart has its own discrimination. And the more we listen and follow the promptings of the heart, the more we will be able to build a richer soul body. And when we do that, in that richer soul body, the Christ within speaks to us, and the process builds on itself. It's a mounting thing. Next time we'll begin by talking about the reflecting ether and building it into the soul body, and then we've got a few other topics. We'll close with the Rosicrucian prayer. O God, increase my love for thee, so that we may serve thee better from day to day, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
What, over so soon?